Today, we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello.
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine-free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Oh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Famously, during the Second World War, Ireland was neutral, albeit the state did give some unofficial help to the Allies in fighting fascism. There were, however, many, many brave Irish men and women who fought against the fascists, who were part of the resistance. And it's a great book by Clodagh Finn and John Morgan that we're going to talk about now. The Irish in the Resistance, the untold stories of the ordinary heroes who resisted Hitler. Clodagh and John, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Matt.
Pleasure.
What got you into this?
Well, for me, it all started with Mary Elms. You might describe her as the Irish Oscar Schindler. She saved over 400 children with her colleagues from a holding camp in Riefsalt in the south of France. And I came across her in about 2016. A theatre company did Smashing Times, did a vignette about her. And I said, why don't I know her name? And why isn't she a household name? And I started to do a little bit of research about this woman born in Cork. She studied in Trinity, studied French and Spanish, and her love of Spanish brought her first to the Spanish Civil War, and then she followed the people up along the east coast of Spain, places we know very well as holiday destinations now, like Malaga and Alicante, and she set up hospitals there. And she followed these refugees over the border, and that's how she ended up in the south of France when the World War II broke out. So she was in a camp with tens of thousands of Spanish people. And suddenly those camps started to fill first with Belgians and people who were fleeing the Nazi influx when the Nazis took over the Low Countries in 1940. And then they started to fill with Jewish people. And in 1942, she saw that children and Jews were being taken away in cattle wagons to camps in the East. And she and her colleagues who were working for various charities, she was working for the US Quakers, said, this is not good. They did not realise the exact and full extent of what was happening. But she started to spirit away children as they were being deported to Germany. And she saved, the tally is 427. She helped others get papers, identity cards that helped them to escape. She was arrested by the Germans and imprisoned for 6 months. And actually, it was a letter writing campaign by her mother who got her out of there. And she came back to work in 1943 and said, oh, well, we all experienced inconveniences during the war. She's honoured by Israel. And recently, thankfully, I think she's much better known here because there is now a bridge that carries her name in Cork. So that started me thinking about there are so many Irish people who were caught up in extraordinary situations during World War II. And that's when I met John, because John had been researching for very many years what were called the escape lines. And they were clandestine routes right down through Belgium, France, and over the Pyrenees into Spain. And people were spirited along those.
Yeah, and my introduction, Matt, was a chance meeting I had back in 2009 with a lady called Nadine Dumont, a former member of the Belgian Resistance. And I had come across this term in a book, escape lines, which, you know, we all knew about conventional resistance. I had no idea what escape lines were, but as Clodagh has described them, it was about sheltering people. It was those that were trying to get out of occupied, Nazi-occupied Europe, be they Jewish people or airmen, etc. Escape lines would shelter them, treat their wounds, create false documents, false travel papers, and take them over the mountain. And an organisation would commemorate that every year, and it was a good way of taking history out of the books. You strapped on your walking boots and you went across the Pyrenean routes that were used all those years ago. And I had met Nadine Dumont, and she was keen to talk to me simply because I was Irish, and she wanted to tell me about a lady who she described as her friend, Catherine Crean. We found out later Catherine Crean was from Moore Street. She was in Brussels during the war, and she got involved both with an intelligence network and then with the Comet escape line. Both Nadine and Catherine were arrested ultimately and ended up in the hellish Ravensbrück concentration camp. And Nadine was very keen to recall a particularly poignant episode when she came back to the barracks after a day's work. Catherine was there very weak, as we know, sadly, was probably approaching death. And Catherine asked Nadine, just as a gesture of human comfort, would she comb her hair? She had beautiful red hair. And Nadine said to me, "John, I was so weak, I literally couldn't even do that much for her." And she became extremely emotional, even after all of those years. And what I took away from it, Matt, was that she really wanted, or appeared to want, that Catherine wouldn't be forgotten. She had carried the memory of her friend all those years and wanted to make sure that Irish people wouldn't forget her. So similar to Clodagh, I thought, I have never heard of this lady. How many other Catherine Creans are out there? And that began.
And you've picked more than 60 Irish people for this book. As was the very famous case was Samuel Beckett, the Nobel laureate, who was an Irishman who was involved in the resistance in France. But we won't focus on him now. You actually discovered as well that there were a disproportionate number of Irish women who got involved in the resistance,
didn't
you?
That's right. I think the ratio in general would be about 10% of resistors were women. But in the Irish case, it's 50-50, which is extraordinary. That might be because we've uncovered those stories. They've come down to us or survived. But it really is the number of women who joined the resistance right across Europe and beyond is extraordinary.
Well, tell me some more of the stories of the individuals. So we've done Catherine Crean and Mary Elms. Who can tell me about Margaret Kelly?
Yes, Margaret was born in the Rotunda Hospital, Matt, in 1912. And clearly in difficult circumstances, insofar as we know her parents, the names of her parents, but they were not able, for one reason or another, to look after her after she was born. So a neighbouring family called the Murphys, there were a number of sisters, were asked to look after her as a child. And in particular, Mary Murphy, who was a seamstress in the local area, looked after her. And then you come along to 1916, Margaret was four, and Mary decided that probably for economic reasons, it was time to create a new life elsewhere. So she decided to emigrate to Liverpool with Margaret and start a new life there. Now, Margaret, as a child, her legs were quite weak, probably from possibly lack of nutrition, et cetera, et cetera. And a doctor in Liverpool recommended to Margaret that she might think of enrolling her in a dance class, which was a very fateful decision because Margaret turned out to be somewhat of a dance prodigy. And that began her life dancing. And when she was in her late teens, she began to travel with the passion of her life. And ultimately, she ended up in Paris. And in 1932, she created her own dance troupe called the Bluebell Girls. And the readers of the book can see why that name was significant. And she began to work in the famous Folies Bergère Theatre. And there she met Marcel Leboyvici, who was the director of the orchestra, part Jewish. They fell in love and they got married. And obviously, when the war broke out, then he was in difficulty. She, first of all, because she was travelling on a British passport and hadn't taken the opportunity to take an Irish passport, she was interned in Besançon in France, and the Irish authorities arranged for her release. Her husband back in Paris had decided not to register, as he was required to do so as Jewish, or wear the infamous yellow star. And ultimately, he was arrested he was imprisoned in Gurs concentration camp. He was a very resilient and resourceful man, and he planned an escape, which he successfully carried out and made his way back to Paris. And the rest of the war, in terms of Margaret, was trying and doing everything she could to shelter and hide her husband, to provide for him and also for their children. They had a family, and so she had to work and provide and hide her husband. That included providing some money to the caretaker of the building they were in, so that she wouldn't betray them to the Germans. And thankfully, he survived, although the activities and the tension that she had to put up with all through those years, we detail in the book. It was fortunate because, as it turned out, that caretaker of the building was an informant to the Germans, and the money they were giving her was slightly less than what Margaret had. So it's very, very small margins. But she had a very, very interesting post-war life, Matt. She ended up going back to her dance career and the Bluebell Girls. And in time, she provided dancers to the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas. And in time, the famous French director François Truffaut made a film called The Last Metro. And that film is inspired by the story of Margaret Kelly from Dublin.
Tell me about one of the men, Clodagh, Captain John Keeney from Cork.
Oh, I find his story very moving, really. We know about John Keeney because it's his devil-may-care kind of swashbuckling side that is described in great detail by his comrade-in-arms, William Pickering. There were six of them were members, special agents of the SOE, which is the Special Operations Executive, which was set up by Winston Churchill to set Europe ablaze. Basically, it was a crack team that would parachute behind enemy lines to help the resistance. And in 1945, in February, John Keeney was one of these guys who parachuted into Italy. And for the first 3 weeks, everything went well. He was a radio operator. He was hidden by local farmers, the Biestros. I mention them because that becomes relevant later on. They would go into their attic and send information back to London. Bear in mind, they were just 400 metres away from a German installation. So it was extremely dangerous. And Sergeant Pickering tells the story of how they used to go out late at night, you know, to get batteries and whatever in the nearby town. And it went so well that they decided one night they'd go out for a night on the tiles because they were getting a little bit bored. And they went off in the through these back streets and through farms, and they drank themselves silly in a pub surrounded by Germans. And John Keeney had to be told, don't sing Danny Boy. He had been born in Cork in 1915. And it's a sad story. His father was killed by the IRA when he was just six. He was an RIC district inspector. So he went to England. He studied French and German in college, but still was very much identified as an Irish person. The fact that he spoke languages is very important, and you'll find that in all the people, most of the people in the book, they have a knowledge of language. So he could speak Italian, so that was very important when they were parachuted into Italy.
But unfortunately, he died in an ambush.
He died in an ambush. And I don't know how he managed to find time, but he managed to bury an envelope with some ciphers and some quartz in it just before he was killed. And just to say, a really poignant thing was the woman who had sheltered him got to know him very well over 3 weeks. It would have been an intense 3 weeks. And I found a letter in the archive in Kew that she had written to his mother. And it's the most poignant letter, saying, I'm writing to you as a mother, saying, I'm so sorry to hear of your son's death, and we will visit his grave when we get a chance.
There are so many other great stories in this book. The Irish and the Resistance, the untold stories of the ordinary heroes who resisted Hitler. This just gives a small flavour of all these incredible lives and the incredible sacrifices that they made to fight fascism. So Clodagh Finn and John Morgan, thank you so much for coming in to join us.
A pleasure. Thank you, Matt.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Today we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello.
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Ooh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.